Welcome back to Back in My Play. This is episode number 12. This week we're going to be discussing Disney's Aladdin for the Sega Genesis and the Mega Drive. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me this week is Josh Hillier. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, there are two versions of me, but the Super Nintendo version is definitely the best.
We'll see about that, but you will notice that Trey Gibson is out. He had the Pokemon fever last week, and it's driven him to the hospital where he's got a case of the Squirtles. So he's going to be dealing with that. And it's, you know, it's just thankfully it's not the Bulbasaurs, because those things just sprout.
Hate to see that.
Unstoppable. Let's get right into it this week. Really, the history of Aladdin is very interesting, because Josh alluded to this a little bit, but you will notice with the Sega Genesis and the Super Nintendo going head-to-head back in the early 90s, a lot of the times you would get, you know, the same game just ported to each console. In this case, you got two completely different games by two completely different development teams and two completely different publishers. So let's talk about it. Disney's Aladdin for the Sega Genesis came out in November on November 11th, 1993, worldwide. It came out, obviously, in Europe and in Japan. Disney's Aladdin for Mega Drive and the Sega Genesis was developed by Virgin Interactive Studio of Virgin Games USA and published by Sega. This was due to the fact that Sega had both obtained a license for publishing video games based on Disney's motion picture and established a collaboration deal with Disney's animation studio, which was a first in the video game industry. And this is really interesting. We're going to get back to this. So Sega of America tasked the Virgin Games USA development team with the programming duties because of their obvious success with previous efforts like McDonald's Global Gladiators and 7-Up's Cool Spot, which actually those were both pretty good games that I remember.
Cool Spot especially, yeah.
Oh, Cool Spot. I mean, in terms of licensed games, holy crap, that game was really good. You know, even being in terms of a mascot game as well. So the cool thing with this whole partnership is that Virgin America used an in-house Digicel process to compress the data onto the cartridge. The game also featured arrangements and original compositions composed by Donald S. Griffin. A port of the game was ported down to the Nintendo Entertainment System, and it was later adopted that version to the Game Boy, which was compatible with the Super Game Boy as well, and the game was then again later ported to the Game Boy Color. This game was just kind of all over the place. The PC versions for the Amiga and DOS were also based on the Mega Drive Genesis version and featured enhanced music and sound effects. One final interesting thing of note, especially today, now with Gaikai and the PlayStation 4, but also because his history with fantastic franchises like Earthworm Jim, Dave Perry was head on the development of this game with Virgin America. So very interesting history. And on the flip side, we're not going to be talking about this game directly today, but the Super Nintendo version was created or developed at Capcom in Japan and developed specifically for the Super Nintendo, which, again, just adds to some confusion if you talk to some friends on the playground about playing Aladdin, and if you were playing it on the Genesis, you might have a completely different story to tell than if you were talking with someone that was playing it on the Super Nintendo, because they did not just have, you know, it's the same kind of obviously based IP, but the mechanics were completely different.
Yeah, what a weird thing too. I can't think of very many other games that have completely different versions on systems that are roughly similar in terms of hardware and architecture.
Well, I mean, the cool thing that we've been able to do in the past is like we did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time versus Hyperstone Heist.
Right.
And like that is kind of cool because you can almost like talk about the compromises that they made from the different forms of hardware. And same thing with like the Power Rangers games like that, that were just kind of like ported to everything. They're really interesting to compare in this day and age. And that's why we're kind of giving this its own episode. And then we're going to also talk about the Super Nintendo game later on, because again, it's so different from the mechanics to the music to the levels that it really deserves its own episode. And interesting fact, we're not going to get into it too much, but like I said, being developed at Capcom, Shinji Mikami actually was lead designer of Aladdin on the Super Nintendo. And obviously he's had his hand in some very classic franchises throughout video games up until today. So it is, it's just such a weird franchise to have an interesting history. And then to, you know, on the Super Nintendo be lead developer from the guy that brought us Resident Evil.
Yeah, that it is strange. This one-off Disney movie, you know, would deserve these two different games. You're right, that's weird.
That's kind of the interesting history of Aladdin. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be right back talking about our history with the game and then going back into the future to talk about our revisiting of the game. So stick around. Okay, we're back in 1993, and at this time, in 1993, I still did not have a Sega Genesis, but I was very lucky to know people that had a Genesis. I was not one of the households with the dual consoles, but this is the first time I ever played either of the games. Was actually on the Sega Genesis at a friend's house, and being at that age, I saw the movie, really enjoyed the movie, and was blown away by how well the Genesis version of this game captured the feel, and especially the animation of the movie. But we will be honest, Josh and I did not play this game extensively growing up. Like, literally, the people across the street just had a Genesis, so I got to play it there a couple times. But it is a classic. It is one of the top games ever to come out on the Genesis and Master Drive. So that's why pretty much everyone ends up playing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what was your first experience with this game? Was it playing it for this episode, or, you know, did you capture it a couple years ago?
I played the Super Nintendo version. I rented that version when I was in grade school. And so I think this is my very first time playing the Genesis version. And the reason for that is that I didn't know they were two different games back then. Because if I had, I would have played both, because I had both of those consoles and would have loved to have seen the differences. So yeah, this is my very first time playing it on the Genesis.
And we've said in the past, like, it is fun to talk about, you know, the differences between ports and, like, the hardware's capabilities. But, you know, that was the thing. Like, if you said, yeah, I played the Super Nintendo version, it's obviously the better version. It has a better sound chip and it's more capable graphically. So why would I go back?
Same game, though.
Yeah, but so why would I go play the Genesis version?
Right.
So a lot of people who had Super Nintendos, like, wouldn't go back to it because why would you do that?
And they didn't really communicate that at all. I don't know if that was Disney's decision not to communicate that or what.
No, I mean, obviously the box art was the same because they're just using the movie, like, box art or the, you know, from the VHS tape. So
right.
It's kind of hard to distinguish that as a child growing up. And, you know, again, when you have limited rentals, like, are you going to rent Aladdin again on the Genesis, or are you going to, like, rent something like Mercs? Let's be real. So when it came to replaying this game, again, I am super fortunate today to have one of those crazy modded Genesis System 1s that have an S-video out. And then going through the Framemeister, it looks quite good. And this isn't a game I've played a lot of. Like, you own it because if you have a Genesis, and you're a collector, you're supposed to have Aladdin. It's one of the best games. But I've never really sat down and played through this game ever. And turning it on this past week, I was blown away by how great this game looks. Like, I will put it up head-to-head with any Super Nintendo game with how it looks. Specifically, the animation of the game is so fluid. It looks like a moving cartoon to the extent of, you know, I can see why when people played this back in the day, they stood by it and saying, like, this, you know, this game is fantastic. Like, even as being a, you know, IP or a mascot game or whatever, I mean, like a property game, you would think those fantastic LJN games would sour us so much we'd never want to touch a licensed property video game. But this game nails the animation. It has fantastic music that does a great job with the sound chip that's in the Genesis. And it is kind of like pure joy. It just did such a great job of like, the thing that I kept writing down when I was taking notes for this game is that it completely captures the feel of the movie. And, you know, I'm going to toss it off to you, Josh, but, like, immediately when I started playing it, I'm like, wait, this is Prince of Persia, because there's, like, momentum and stuff. Like, if you let go of the D-pad, like, you still have momentum running. So I started getting immediately, obviously due to the placement of the game locale, you also get that kind of Prince of Persia feel. But that is something that stood out immediately.
Yeah, well, and what you're talking about is it really feeling like the movie experience. The music just playing right away. I mean, I know that's a small thing and an obvious thing to do if you're making a movie-based game, but it's playing from the start, and you're just kind of thrown into the middle of everything. You're given a very brief little tutorial screen, and I mean a screen. It shows you everything you need to know all on one screen, which I think it should be commended for that. And then you're running through the atmosphere you would expect to be running through, and it is very Prince of Persia. Swordplay is really fun. You can actually like clash swords with people sometimes when you're both pressing the B button at the same time, which I just think is I just thought that was really cool. I didn't remember that necessarily, and maybe the SNES version doesn't do that. Perhaps I need to look more closely at the differences.
Josh, I have to ask you, have you played a lot of like Prince of Persia in the past?
No, but my my best friend was like really obsessed with Prince of Persia, so I've watched a lot of Prince of Persia.
Or even if you've on Game Center CX, that's a really good episode. You can can find the translated version or the subtitled version. And like you mentioned that swordplay again, that's something like really I was getting the feel of from this game, kind of like seeing it mirrored from Prince of Persia. And and also like again, you kind of like make the connection a little bit more when you start playing it, but also. The look and kind of the animation and the movement is something that is also feeling a lot like Earthworm Jim on the Genesis as well.
Yeah, well, you mentioned David Perry, right? Was having a role?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so then certainly that makes sense with the Earthworm Jim connection. But in terms of animation and just sort of the look in general, and then like some of the sound effects, like when you hit your head and you hear sort of like a squishy sound, that's a really good comparison. But kind of what you were bringing up, the swordplay as well, and the thing that stood out to me about that is that most 16-bit era games, if you were attacking an enemy, either you hit the enemy or they hit you. There was no like deflection from the sword, you know, like that really stood out as being sort of advanced for its time, and pretty good platforming too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like the third level has is sort of like a dark, scary level with skeleton characters and that sort of thing. And then you have platforms that'll appear and then go away because they're coming in and out of the walls. You really have to get into some timing. So the game kind of presents itself as more of like an action kind of romp at first when you play the first level. But then over time, you start to realize, hey, this is a pretty competent platformer as well.
Yeah, and it starts off relatively easy. I think, you know, again, I don't want to go necessarily in the differences between the two games right now, between the Super Nintendo version and the Genesis, but your life bar is kind of unique in terms of you don't know exactly how much life you have, which is kind of, I think, a detriment to it because it kind of is depicted as a, you know, like the genie bottle with smoke coming out of it, and as that smoke gets shorter, your life is going down. So it's kind of hard to get a clear idea of like, oh, how much life do I really have left? But they're pretty generous with A, extra health in the game, and then B, there's a bunch of checkpoints throughout the level. So it is, you know, pretty generous to the point where you don't really get frustrated. If you die, who cares? You go back, like you might lose 3 minutes of progress.
Right.
But you're not going to lose so much where like, man, I just, you know, some of the levels are, you know, they're kind of long for platformers where you're talking like the 6, 7, 8 minute long, setup. So, mm-hmm. It is nice to have those checkpoints. And, with the opening menu, like you mentioned, it gives you some idea of like, all right, these are the items that I need to keep a lookout for because these are the benefits that I'm going to get from them. Like finding the gems so you can use them at the end of the level, almost like a simple, watered down version of what they do in Super Mario Brothers 2, in the US version, where if you collect coins at the end, you get a slot machine and you have the chance of winning extra lives. It is the same thing in Aladdin, but you can, it's just one slot and you're just trying to pick up extra lives for the most part. You can pick up extra gems, and it is just
I agree, that's cool.
There's lots of good mechanics. It's just super well refined, and it's just a really great way of molding that IP onto like the standard platformer of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And it even, you know, you were talking about the multiple different things that you do in the game. We haven't mentioned, we were talking about swordplay, but you also have projectiles that you throw. I think they're what, apples or something along those lines?
Yep.
And that's cool, though, because that adds another element that you can attack enemies in different ways. You know, if you want to try, if you're getting low on health, assuming you know how much health you have, you can choose to maybe jump and throw apples at the person instead of getting in close and fighting them sword to sword.
Well, it's a simple, it's like the simple down version of what you have in like Castlevania or Ninja Gaiden, where you would have like a projectile and then you have your, you know, sword or something like that. Did you notice that when you would throw apples at guys that were throwing knives, like sometimes the apples would get chopped in half midair?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those subtle things. But it's you're right. It's super cool. And it just shows a different level of depth, kind of like the, you know, the swords getting caught on each other sometimes. You can miss these things, but if you really look at them, they were there. Pretty advanced AI.
Would you consider yourself to be a Disney fan?
No, which is, you know, why it's probably kind of sad that Trey's not here, because I'm really not all that big of a Disney fan. What about you?
I had an aunt growing up who bought every single Disney movie, the animated movie that ever came out. So I saw them all, like all the way to Rescuers Down Under and stuff like that.
Sure.
But I was never really a fan of it. I liked this movie because A, I liked Robin Williams's genie character, and B, like we for some reason had the soundtrack on tape, which is pretty much as bad as it sounds. Like hearing that theme song over and over and over again.
On cassette.
Not like the song you hear from the first stage. I mean like that the vocal song. I can't remember what it's called, but
yeah.
It kind of drove me nuts as a kid. So it's one of those things where it is such a great IP for the people that are Disney fans, like the people that like Disney Infinity and are into that stuff. I think it stands on its own IP, you know, or not, that it is just a really great playing platformer with some interesting mechanics, like some really great ways to traverse through the levels. And then, if you are a fan of the movie, it follows the movie literally scene by scene to the point where you're going through like the village, then you're getting arrested and you're in the dungeon. It just kind of like is the perfect companion piece to someone that wants more from that universe, where unfortunately we don't really see that. Like if we could have gotten that with something like Ghostbusters, like originally, like, or even, I know Ghostbusters on the Genesis is pretty good, but, like that is one of the reasons why I ended up loving Ghostbusters on the 360 and PS3 and PC, is because like, finally we got something that I feel like a Ghostbuster. You can really feel like Aladdin traversing through these levels because he was so acrobatic in the movie, and, you get to see all the characters. Like it is just, a fun, positive experience, you know?
Yeah, man, we're kind of gushing about Aladdin here, but indeed, it is really faithful and really good. And also, even if you're not really into the movie necessarily, because I haven't seen the movie in a long time, not since I was a kid, the game just holds up really well, you know? Like, aside from knowing the IP or the characters, it's just a really good 2D action platformer.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, yeah, and like the traversal stuff as well. Super cool. Like there are ropes that you'll grab and kind of like fly up. And then you can grab on the different things and climb a little bit higher. You can jump pretty far every time you jump anyway. And there's like all sorts of little nooks and crannies within the levels that you can explore if you're observant. So it's a fun game just to run around in.
You know, at least let's be real. The game is pretty easy.
It is.
So even, and it's, I'm not even going to say it's short for today's standards, obviously. Like you can blow through it in about an hour. It's not a super easy, but it is a relatively easy final boss battle with basically just kind of simple platforming and patience will kind of seal the victory for you. But in the end, I think it is arguably the best Disney game that's out there. And I have, the only way that I will kind of compare these is I have played the Super Nintendo version a lot more, and I had way more fun playing the Genesis version because it was at least maybe it was just because it was different, because on the Super NES version, you're jumping on top of people to like defeat them. You're still throwing stuff. But I liked the swordplay, and I liked just how it kind of like nailed the animation. I think the animation, I haven't played the Super NES one in a while, but I feel like the Genesis versions might have better animation in it than the Super Nintendo version. But I'd have to go back and really take a look one-to-one.
Right, and I think we're doing it the right way by just, you know, presenting them as different games, because that's really what they are. So just, you know, in terms of the way the games are designed, they're going to lend themselves to being better at different elements, like the Genesis version perhaps being better at combat, for instance, and maybe the Super Nintendo game being a little bit more fluid to play.
Yeah, and Sears,
it represents the developers who made the games as well, you know, because like when you think about Mikami, like that's someone who's really big into the games being fast and action-packed the whole time. Right.
No, for sure. And it's, I mean, at the end of the day, you got to kind of remember it's a game for kids. And like I said, the last boss battle with Jafar, it's like literally you're kind of, as long as you have apples, you're going to be good to go. And just nailing down your timing through his different forms is like really all you got to do. But it's still, you know, a fun experience. And you got to remember, this is made for like 5 and 6 year olds. So,
yeah,
keep that in mind if you do end up picking it up.
They were better gamers back then, the 5 and 6 year olds.
It is kind of a shame. Like when we talked about last week, games like Mega Man 2 that had so many re-releases because of the whole like licensing issue with games like this, it's so hard to actually see Disney games get re-released because of the issue between Virgin America and who owns, you know, those rights, and Disney, and then Sega. Like, it's just a complete cluster F between all the different holders of rights and stuff like that.
You're only playing this on a Sega Genesis if you're playing it, unless you're emulating it, but legally and all those kinds of issues, you're probably only playing it on a Sega Genesis.
Yeah, and it's not a bad way to do it. Like, as long as you can hook it up to a tube TV or get one of those modded Genesises, I think you're going to be pretty much good to go. But I will put my, you know, money down as being one of my favorite Disney games. And like I said, not being a huge Disney fan, that's not really saying a ton. But I think it does a great job with really representing the IP well in, you know, something that we see in so few games. Like I said, if we could only see like a good Back to the Future game, and unfortunately I never played those adventure games. But I probably should at some point, since I own them on three different consoles.
That's not what you ever really imagined, though, for Back to the Future, you know? Like, nobody as a kid is dreaming of, oh, man, I really hope they make a point-and-click version of this.
Yeah, I just don't like adventure games.
Yeah, exactly.
So it is what it is. But anything else in terms of Aladdin? I know we have a really good discussion topic coming up after this. So
yeah, let's get to that. Let's hop on our carpet and have that conversation.
Cool. Well, stick around. Josh has some confessions to make, and also we're going to be talking about some cool retro stuff we've been playing, and also what we have coming up with the Resident Evil episodes that we have coming. So stick around. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back for our news and discussion segment. But yeah, Josh, I think you had some things to say, so I'm going to kind of give you the floor for a second.
So after much contemplation, I first of all, I thought about going to Twitter. Second of all, I thought about going to NeoGAF and making a thread. And nothing against either one of those places, but I was like, wait a second, I have a podcast that I can speak on the subject and really kind of explain myself fully as opposed to using written text. So here's my dilemma. And, you know, I'm very fine with being forthcoming with you guys about my life. I'm 29 years old. And that means that I very much grew up in the NES to SNES to Genesis to N64 generation, with the Xbox and PS2 and all those consoles, GameCube being college systems for me, and then obviously on from there. So anyway, as someone who's grown up in that age, and I'm someone who has a kid and you know, and a house and all those things to keep up with and a job, I have less and less time to play games, and that can be a really complicated thing. And I think it's something that probably a lot of people who listen to this podcast go through, that they have careers and they have people in their lives and just, you know, all sorts of things that they have to keep up with that make it really hard to sit down and play something for 3-4 hours a night like they were able to in the generations that we often discuss in Back in My Play, and these things that we feel so nostalgic about. So all of that's a long-winded way for me to say that last night I was given some time to myself, which is always a really strange thing. And I was like, okay, cool, I'm going to catch up on some console games, like some AAA console games. I'm going to actually dig into these things, make some progress. I'll spend 4 or 5 hours, you know, like this thing I never do anymore. So I fired up The Last of Us, which is a game that I've just been getting into over the last couple of weeks since I rebought a PlayStation 3. And I think The Last of Us is a phenomenal game. I think it's very impressive in terms of its storytelling and presentation, voice acting, just a lot of different things really impressed me. I think Naughty Dog certainly are some of the most talented people around making games these days. But at the same time, I just had this overwhelming feeling while playing The Last of Us of, I really don't want to be doing this. You know, like, but this is my one chance. I have this one little bit of, this little pocket of time to actually play some games. So I need to just keep playing it. And so I did, and still had that nagging feeling of, this is a great game. I know it's a great game. I can tell it is. It has all the pieces that would make it great, but I'm just not having fun. And so therefore, I think that that's very much, I thought about this a lot, and I thought about making a thread, the thread that people make from time to time on NeoGAF of, you know, is my love for video games fading as I get older or whatever. But then I played Spelunky for a little while, and then I played Hotline Miami for a little while, and some Wonderful 101 with my time that I had. And I realized that, you know what, the problem is not that I don't like video games. The problem is that I am so entrenched in that generation of the 80s to 90s. And, you know, I thought about this GamePro rating scale, and they used to give you 4 different things. It was graphics, sound, control, fun factor. Those are the 4 criteria, and each one was on a 1 to 5 scale. And fun factor was always the most important one, the one that they presented last. And I get it that video games are evolving and that they're very much storytelling mechanisms now in a lot of cases. And so fun factor might not be as important when you are thinking about it as a way to tell narratives and to present stories in unique ways. Like when you look at The Walking Dead and some of the different things that have come out in the last few years, Heavy Rain, you know, there's a lot of games that really emphasize storytelling more than they emphasize gameplay. But I'm such a child of that generation that championed gameplay first and foremost. And, you know, just thinking about that fun factor label from the old GamePro magazines, that was the difference, you know, that I realized I don't have to sit here and play this really tense, atmospheric game when I could be playing Spelunky, which I just think is one of the greatest games to ever be made. I think that it has a small group of people who are obsessed with it like me. And I think it's just the perfect sort of sequel to what we loved about games in the 90s. It's just so very much made in that same sort of loving style. And then playing Hotline Miami, which shows that it's not an issue of me not liking atmosphere or games being dark, because that game is very, very dark and very creepy and unsettling if you have never played it before. It's just presented in sort of a 16-bit graphic style. And then Wonderful 101, which is very much a big budget game, as big budget as Platinum gets to make, of course, $60 boxed game, but it's Platinum game. So it's all like gameplay first. And that's why I love that company so much. And I guess what I realized is, and I'm relieved about this because, you know, as somebody who has a pretty prominent role on this podcast, thanks to Kevin for putting it together, I didn't want to be one of those people who just stopped playing games or only played retro stuff, even though I do probably prefer retro stuff. It was just sort of this realization that, you know what, I don't have to play the big first-person shooter that's out right now, or The Last of Us, or whatever else it is that it looks like I'm supposed to be playing because of the acclaim that these games receive, that I can very much just be comfortable living my version of what AAA console gaming should be, which is an extension of the 90s types of games. So I guess that's sort of my opening to this conversation, if you want to jump in, Kevin.
Yeah, well, I mean, I will be honest. Like, this is one of the things that I talked about with the A4 guys when I was on their podcast on and off the air before we did it, is that, like, I will be completely honest. I was kind of in the same boat, and I can't even, you know, begin to imagine the time constraints of, you know, having, you know, a family, you know, in the house with you, to budget that time with, along with, you know, work, and you've gotten even busier with work as of late. So, with me in this podcast, like, you can look at that initial thread. I literally almost started this podcast just to say, all right, Kevin, you got a big ass wall of games that you can now afford and that you bought for yourself. Why don't you go play them? Why do they keep sitting on your wall? You never touch them. So this was kind of an excuse to force myself to play them and have that social responsibility and the accountability from the audience to, like, make sure you're still pumping out episodes and you're still playing the games that you're supposed to be playing. And it's really, like, obviously the retro stuff is kind of what fuels me, and it's why you mentioned, like, it is kind of weird, but I go through phases. Like, I played all the way through Grand Theft Auto V. I played all the way through Beyond Two Souls in the last couple of weeks. But at the same time, when there's not stuff like that out, I won't touch my PS3. I won't turn on my 360. It will literally just be the PlayStation Vita or the 3DS getting all my playtime because of one simple factor, sleep mode, where I can close up the 3DS. I can press the, you know, power button on the Vita, put it to sleep, and then come back to it whenever I want and have smaller bite-sized pieces of gaming. And
it's brilliant.
Yeah, and it's great because these consoles we have coming out are doing the same thing. Like, they have that sleep mode. PS4 and Xbox One at least will have that sleep mode enabled, so you can kind of, like, keep it on at all times, but it's on a super low powered state. We'll see what, you know, when those come out, what power usage is actually like. But with a lot of my gaming tastes now, I go through periods where I don't want to touch video games. I still don't, like, even though I will be honest with you, I am very successful at what I do in my life with my career. I would love to be doing something that involved video games instead, just because it is just such an interesting medium. It was such an integral part of my childhood. It's something that is obviously we're passionate about because, you know, we devote time doing this podcast and doing the website stuff, doing videos. And I think it's hopefully something that comes across. But at the end of the day, I think you can never, ever, ever stress out about not playing stuff. You should only play stuff when you feel like you're in the mood to play stuff.
Right.
But go ahead.
Yeah, what you're saying makes so much sense. You know, like, you just started really hitting a nerve with me in a good way about you don't have to like we're not getting paid to play or not play games.
Or look at the people with backlogs. Like people, again, wherever you talk about people, there's websites devoted for people to keep track of their back, like their backlog games. And I am straight up like, if I don't use something, I sell it. You can always rebuy something again. You might lose some money, but to be honest, you might not ever go buy that game again. There's games that I've literally bought, I've kept sealed, and then I sold them because I never, you know, opened them up and played them. And you should never stress out about that. It is a almost a minimalistic lifestyle that I've tried to adapt, even with owning, you know, maybe 110 carts. It's still something that is way more minimalistic than I could be if I really wanted to. I have the money to own 1,000 video games. I don't want to or need to, though, because if there's ever something I want to play for the podcast, I can go to eBay. I can jump on Craigslist. There's trading websites. There's all this other stuff. So you should, like, I just don't. It almost freaks me out now to, like, see people with collections of games that, like, fill up whole bookshelves and walls of video games, just because, like, what value does it really have sitting there when there's going to be things like disc rot? There's going to be, you know, if you really want to play something, you can always virtual console or PSN or emulate or whatever. You can always do that. But I just never get it. And like I talked about in the last episode, when the 360, I've been re-listening to like the old One Up Yours episodes leading up into the console launches of last gen. And like, I was hardcore Microsoft Xbox 360 guy. I got Xbox 360 at launch. I was so hardcore about that. I was like, you PS3 dumbasses. Like, I can't believe you guys are spending $600 on that for no games. Like, the games all run terribly on it. The online service is horrible. Like, why would you ever to buy that? And then I come to 6-7 years later, I am all about the PlayStation platform. Way more into the PlayStation Vita than the 3DS. My 360 hasn't been turned on since Halo 4 came out. And going into the next gen, I'm all PlayStation 4 and Vita at this point, just because, like, again, tastes do change. And you go from being the guy that wants to play Call of Duty to the guy that wants to possibly play Puppeteer.
And Journey and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, and like I haven't talked about this on the show specifically, but there's some hard things going on in my life right now, and it's really helped to be able to pop something in. Like, I gotta be honest, like putting in Puppeteer, putting in a Happy Game, or even putting in something like Aladdin, something that is just a joyful game, has really helped my mood, because I've been a wreck these last couple of weeks, and being able to have something like that to go to, or even to play something as dumb as Earth Defense Force, like just stupid, like obnoxiously terrible fun, has really been able to put a smile on my face. So I think it's all about going with the flow of what you want to play and never feeling tied down to anything, tied down to owning this stuff. If you feel like it's putting stress on you, sell it, get rid of it. there's no point in keeping this stuff. It's not unless it's something that's super rare that you got signed by Shigeru Miyamoto, or something like that. Don't be tied to this stuff. You guys, there's much more important things in life, and the world could end tomorrow. And what use is that, you know, copy of Super Tecmo Bowl going to do you if you have no electricity? Like, it's not going to matter. That's why you should have a portable.
Wow. Yeah, that was actually, that was really nicely said, though, about sort of, hey, just live life. You know, life is hard enough. So
again, it's like, I won't mention directly, but you look at so many people that are like stressed out, like, I have all these games. What game should I play? I never play my games, even though I own all this stuff. I'm like, then sell it. Like, you obviously don't want to play the stuff. Like, you might want to own it. But you know, there's only so much you can do with it. Like, I'm a complete dumbass where I bought Persona 4. I own the hard copy. I own the box copy. I even bought the digital copy this week because it was on sale for $20, because I figured might as well always keep it on the system. But I've talked about it so much. I've only played 10 hours, but I love this game. but I'm never playing it just because it is like, or for right now, it's one of those games that I feel like I want to sit down for an hour to play it. Whereas Earth Defense Force, I can play a level in like 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, and then do something else if I don't want to keep playing.
Well, you know what happens with me is that, you know, because I agree with what you're saying, is that, you know, and I feel the same way about Persona 4 Golden, and I've played it about the same amount of time you have, so we're probably at similar points. Is that I won't actually say, though, I'm going to play this for an hour. That just sounds like a really big time commitment to me. And so instead, I'll just start playing Spelunky because I have this obsession with it, like I said. And I know I can play it for 3 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. But then it always turns into an hour anyway. And I don't know what the difference is, really, you know, because I kind of know that that's what's going to happen, is that I'm going to sit there and play it for an hour. And that's the same way I used to play Wave Race 64 when I was, you know, a seventh grader sitting in my room. So,
but the commitments weren't there, where you felt like, oh man, I have all this work to do. Like, there's always things that I could be doing that aren't video games that could be benefiting my career.
That's true.
You know, so that's why it's sometimes hard to think, all right, am I going to put this game into my console? It's going to take 5 minutes. It's going to take a minute to boot up the console, 5 minutes to boot up the game, a minute to load my game save. Then I'm going to be into the world. Then it's going to take 5 minutes to get to wherever I want to go. Like, if you're talking about a Grand Theft Auto game,
and you're talking 15 minutes just to even get started.
Yeah. To get, you just got to get the ball rolling, where, you know, the reason why I like a lot of this retro stuff appeals to me is that I can boot things up really, really fast. I can play it. There's some games that I can replay that I already have. Like, I know what I'm getting into. That is so weird because, like, again, Persona 4, all intents and purposes, is a fantastic game. I played the crap out of Persona 3 Portable. I put 60-something hours into that game, this past fall. Mm-hmm. And everything about it, I'm obsessed with Japan. Like, I'm going to be moving to Japan at some point in my life. Like, it is like the perfect game for me. Like, the personalities are fantastic. The writing is brilliant, and the combat isn't too difficult for me as a, you know, casual RPG fan. And it should be something I should be playing all hours of the day. But it's also the overabundance of, or the overavailability of stuff right now, where you get to the point where you make enough money, you can have a bunch of games. You have stuff like PlayStation Plus, where you get a bunch of free games. You have this stuff sitting on a memory card, and you almost get paralyzed by the choices that you have, where you can't get to doing stuff. Like, this is something that I can't remember if we talked about this on the podcast or not, but like John Riccardi and I were talking about, like, saying, yeah, like, I, you know, I literally started the podcast because I felt paralyzed by the amount of stuff that I own, because I didn't know, man, should I put time into this? Like, am I actually going to sit down and play all the way through it? If I only play like an hour, I'm never going to go back to it. Like, what's, you know, I need to be in the perfect mood to be able to play something sometimes. So it's just like, Kevin, shut the hell up. You shouldn't be so, they're video games. Who cares? So even in these past couple months while doing the podcast, I sold a ton of video games. I went from like 300 something video games in carts and discs, and went down to 100 and change, and just held on to the stuff that I had severe nostalgic value for, or knew, like, all right, yeah, no, I absolutely want to do an episode on this game. I want to make sure that I have a copy of this, because worst case scenario, if you guys said, hey, Kev, I really think we should do Super Contra next week. All right, well, you know, I'll go to eBay and I'll buy a copy of Super Contra for $20. It might be a little bit more. I can bite the bullet, and I don't have to worry about that, like, staring me in the face whenever I look at that huge wall of video games. What am I going to play across, you know, the seven consoles that I have in my living room, across portables and, you know, hardware? It's just nuts. I think Josh ran off because I was talking so much. He may have also needed to get a drink or cover his ears from all that ranting. But
yeah, no, I'm back. I'm sorry. A family thing happened.
No,
that's what we're talking about.
It's totally cool. But again, it's like one of those things that I will, like, finish off by saying, you know, never let any of this stuff own you. You should never be missing life events because of playing video games. You shouldn't miss social events because of playing video games. Find a way that it fits into your life. And if you look at places like Japan, the reason why portables fit into their life is because they spend so much time on the train. There's plenty of people around them to play multiplayer games with ad hoc or to street pass with, things like that. There's not a lot of room in their apartments. And, it just makes sense for them. And that's why us at home, we have less travel time. We tend to live closer to work. We have cars. We have big ass TVs. So we like to play console games, or we have powerful PCs. So we like to do that stuff too. So It's all about finding what fits into your lifestyle, and don't worry about what doesn't, because if you're, playing games, you're still being a part of the, the cool stuff that's going on. And, load up your iPhone or your, MP3 player with podcasts, and you can still experience it through other people. How many games I just experience through people like talking about it on podcasts or, quick looks and stuff like that. Like, you can always do that too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And Giant Bomb's been very helpful in that regard, of way more interesting let's play type of experiences, which is, what a quick look is very much like. They don't play through the whole thing except for in the endurance runs. But yeah, you're right. You can be a part of the discussion, and you can be on NeoGAF and places like that, and just play what you think you really need to be playing, whatever fits your lifestyle. And that's a matter of recognizing, hey, my life has changed, So this conversation is bigger than just a conversation about finding time to play games. I want to be really clear about that. If for those who haven't read through the subtext of what Kevin and I are talking about, it's very much about, hey, you have all these extra responsibilities and things that come along in life, but you can still be a part of all of this by just evolving with it and playing whatever you are then able to do. And for me, that means way less. I control the TV screen way less in my house, but I have a Vita and I have a Wii U, which has off TV play, and I have a 3DS, and I'll get a PS4 at some time in this console generation, and I can play that stuff off TV on the Vita. So it's just a matter of recognizing that I might not play stuff like The Last of Us, but I will play Spelunky for 100 hours and have a really great time and still talk about stuff on this podcast, and very much keep in touch with developers I know and stay a part of the discussion, even if I'm not playing AAA game of the year contender X.
And that's the cool thing is that, some of the game of the year contenders are these small titles like Spelunky, which I haven't picked up yet. I played the demo, and it's so weird. Like, I played the demo like 5 times, and I'm just, again, it's like I look at that home screen on my Vita, and there's so many other games. I have this backlog.
It's like paralyzing, is what we're talking about, trying to defeat that paralysis.
Well, and also like buying games, there's PSN has done a great job of doing sales on games on the Vita and PS3. It's something I really hope that Nintendo starts picking up, which I think they are. Like, they started doing the program with Shin Megami Tensei 4, and if you bought
Fire Emblem.
And Fire Emblem, like, they're doing cool stuff like that. And when they brought out the two Zelda games on Game Boy Color, they did a discount for that. I just hope they start doing some more of that stuff, because I'm a sucker for crap like that. Like, I would literally, for PSN for October, they did a, spend $50, get $10 back deal. So I went directly to Amazon.com and I bought two $50 PSN cards and put them onto my account, saying like, all right, Kevin, you're going to spend this $100 by the end of the month, because you're technically saving 20% on everything. That's on top of, like I said, Earth Defense Force was $15 off. And, I figured might as well get Persona 4 and keep it on my console all the time, because like, as much as I like owning the game itself, it is more convenient to not have to swap out those super, 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 super small carts or carry around the micro boxes with them that are like super breakable.
Yeah, dude, you're right, though. It is just, it's incredible to be able to have all this stuff in one place. And I think that we're sort of in a unique situation as people who now have money to have like every game we want to have, essentially. That you really can load these things up and build quite the backlog. So, it's just a matter of figuring out what you have time for, what your life allows, and and not biting off more than you can chew, like you said.
Yeah, I'm really worried because I have a, by the time you listen to this, I have a 64 gigabyte memory card that's in my Vita, which is super dangerous because, again, it's just going to add even more stuff. And I almost, like, I almost wish I only had a 16 gig card just so I only, like, all right, Kev, you're picking from these four or five games that you're going to be playing right now. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you're going to see this, like, list and list. Like, I have over a dozen PS1 games that I own. I have over, a dozen PSP games that I own. And, you know, a bunch of Vita games that I own. And there's just so much good stuff coming out across all platforms. Like, I know I'm going to be playing A Link Between Worlds at the end of November. I know I have a PlayStation 4 coming on the 15th with Killzone and with Watch Dogs and Rezoguns coming out on that. Like, there's just so much stuff coming. But, like I said, just don't be afraid to sell the stuff. It's really not a lot of money at the end of the day that you're going to be losing. And with disc-based games right now, the prices go down so fast. Like, I just picked up Metal Gear Solid. Revengeance, yeah, through Gamefly for $10.
That was a sweet deal this week. I saw that.
Yeah, so I got that, and it's just like it's sitting on my wall. I'm not playing it right now. Actually, I might give it a shot today, but it's like one of those things that, you know, it's $10, Kev. If you ever never play it, you know, I've blown $10 on much worse stuff in my life. There's people that buy scratch tickets. There's people that buy cigarettes. Like, there's much worse things I could do with that $10 than buy a beautiful platinum game, Josh.
I love it.
Translated by the guys at 8-4, so...
That's yeah, it. Man, this thing has everything going for us.
Yeah, so, like I said, find something that works for you. And I swear, if you live near a Best Buy or a Target or a Walmart, you can always buy these consoles, try them out, see if it fits your lifestyle, and return them. Like, I returned the Wii U because it did not jive with what I wanted out of that console right now. And I knew there was so much other stuff that I wanted to play on the 3DS and the Vita and the PS4 and the PS3 that it just wasn't going to fit into what I want right now. But eventually when 3D World comes out, I'm going to have to get that. And there's going to be, but like I said, we won't get into that. But I don't know, Josh, do you have anything else that you wanted to kind of add to that?
No, you really picked up, we weren't entirely sure where this conversation was going to go. Like I said, it was just something that I was thinking about last night, and Kevin, you did a good job of picking up on where I was going with it and providing a different experience based on how your life is going right now. But you're somebody who's very into his career and is very successful at it. That this really changes how we do things. So it was interesting to get these different perspectives of people who grew up in the same generation, who are kind of going through the same thing. So yeah, I think we'll just leave it at that. Life is the most important thing. But this is, the video games provide a great way to meet a lot of people and be involved in some pretty cool communities and escape from time to time.
Speaking of life, don't forget, if you want to contact us, we hopefully will do some kind of multiplayer stuff with listeners of the show. If you guys want to get into that, we're going to figure out how to do some stuff with some retro games. But hopefully we'll do some of that stuff so we can connect with the crowd. Worst case, PAX is coming up super fast. PAX East, I think those guys that run it are pieces of crap, but maybe we'll do something with that. But we'll see. Other than that, I think that's where we're going to wrap it up. We're going to talk to you guys next time about Resident Evil. And after that, we're going to be talking about Super Castlevania 4.
So, awesome.
Yeah, so we got a good 1-2 punch there. Other than that, don't forget to check out backofmyplay.com. You can check us out on iTunes. Please submit a review if you haven't already. Really, 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 really appreciate that. Share the podcast with your friends. Tell other people about it. That would be really cool of you to do.
Yeah, because we only do this as part of like the community, and you know, as just to further this interest and sort of a need that wasn't really being met in terms of talking about retro games. So
and it makes me
fun when you guys are involved.
Yeah, it makes us more fired up when we see those download numbers hit over 1,000, like it did last episode. So keep that up. Thanks everyone that's started subscribing.
Hey,
all these little buttons that you can pick up in Japan. I'm going back to Japan by the end of the year too.
Awesome.
Because that makes sense.
You know, it makes total sense. It's what you want to be doing.
Yeah, play some RBI baseball, or you know, again, this is all this. The show's over. This is just other crap. I'm playing with my keychains that I got from the Gachapon.
But like, where do you keep all of them? Are they like it's all on your desk? You're just like grabbing.
Yeah,
them?
They're in a teacup.
Okay, cool.
Just in case, like, if I ever want to, if I'm doing like my fitness podcast or I'm talking to people on Skype, I can just be like,
yeah,
because it fits in with everything.
It does.
Everyone knows those sound effects. Like, I could literally talk to someone who's like in their late 50s and be like, "Do you know what this is from?" Like. They'll know what it's from, so.
Yeah, that is, we don't have that sort of iconic type of, you know, as mainstream as video games have become, I don't really, maybe Wii Sports was the last example of something, or Angry Birds, I suppose, that like everybody played.
For sure. All right, so everyone, thanks as always for listening. We'll catch you next time where we're going to be visiting Raccoon City and checking out a seemingly quiet mansion, so stick around.
Come back.
Don't stick around. No, don't wait for it. Go play some of those games sitting on your shelf. Resident Evil.